Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the news from Knife River, as we see it from the Knife River Heritage and Cultural Center perspective. I'm Paul von Gertz. I'm the president of the Knife River Heritage and Cultural Center, and I also write the monthly newsletter, which I find to be quite enjoyable and no shortage of news. So I'm going to be actually going through the newsletters from May and June. May, we had a scheduling conflict, and so I was not able to record. Actually, I forgot. I'll be honest with you. Okay, so let's start here with the main news. And this is right from the newsletter. So I'll read this with hopefully not too much editorializing. But starting in May here, Todd Lindahl, he's a board member, also a historian. He scored another big prize for our depot. But Todd had secured another prize for our depot just after a big score last month when he found an express wagon. It's actually an express cart. Maybe you remember seeing these years ago. Earlier this month, meaning May, Todd went to Woodville, Wisconsin to check out a former Northern Pacific Depot stove to replace the long-missing Coal M stove that had been in our depot and been lost years ago. The Northern Pacific stove is similar to our original, which was one of three that our depot had. One was in the depot agent's office. That was the office in the middle of the building. The second was in the women's waiting room, which was on the east side of the building. They both used the same chimney at the east end of the building, but from opposite sides of a wall. And there's a third stove in the men's waiting room, which was west of the agent's office. Kind of picture this. The agent was in the middle. Men and women were separated, the women on the east side and the men on the west. The fourth room, the far west end of the depot, which is no longer there, was the baggage room, and it was unheated. There's a coal chute was in front of the baggage room and allowed coal to be dumped into a large bin in the basement. There's a trap door and stairs in the rear of the baggage room that led down to the bin where more heating coal was needed. The depot had three coal scuttles or chutes, one for each of the three stoves. One of the many duties of the depot agent, who I portrayed, by the way, during the summer months when we have visitors, but during the winter months was to keep the room in the depot warm. During the summer, the office stove was probably used only to make coffee or warm up a meal. The original small shovel used to add coal to the stove and clean out ashes was found in the attic of the depot. That was fun to find. Now, many of you may be wondering if the stove will be functional, and the answer is, well, yes and no. No, because the stove is not UL approved, and so we cannot get insurance on our building. It's yes, because we will install an electric, small electric ceramic heater inside the stove to give off heat. But no, we aren't telling a lot of people this. We want them to think the heat they may feel in the spring or the fall is actually from a coal-burning stove. It isn't. But it'd be nice to see people huddled around the stove on a late spring or early fall day and feel the warmth radiating from a real 1900s depot coal stove. And I have learned after seeing what Todd has scrounged for a depot and what I think are bargain prices, that Todd, is so well-respected statewide for his knowledge of railroading that people hoarding a depot treasure are actually flattered that Todd covets it and don't even realize the low-ball price they just agreed to. The Knife River Heritage Center wants to thank Bill Berg from Knife River for sponsoring the stove in memory of Terry Berg, his dear and much-loved wife. Terry was a member of the Knife River community and used her creative talents to make beautiful Christmas decorations that she donated to a craft sale at Knife River's annual Christmas Yulebian Festival. Terry would be pleased to know visitors to the depot in cool days will enjoy warmth and conversation while huddled around a stove given in her memory. More signs of the times. Another story here from our May issue. While not trying to sound like the president of the Todd Lindahl fan club, I do want to show readers. That would be good to show readers. How do I do that on the radio? The result is some of Todd's homework over the COVID and bringing back the appearance of a 1900s depot. He has come up with a lot of signs that were originally in the depot, we assume to be in a depot, and he's had them replicated, and they are throughout the depot. One that's really interesting is a replicated Western Union telegraph sign, confirms why the depot was a communication center for the Knife River community, not just official communications, but also gossip. Keep in mind that the depot really was a communication center. A, a telegraph line came in there. B, people came with news from the outside the area. And there was also a post office there, and it was just kind of a greeting place, a meeting place, and lots of gossip exchange. A fun place. Chalkboard that Todd replicated gives arrival and departure schedules for the two railroads that share the depot. Now, here's an interesting point I want to make here, too, that Knife River was the busiest railroad town on the North Shore. And that's because it was the only rail town where two railroads converged. Let's just, for easy sake of geography, there was the East-West Railroad. That would be in what was the what became the DM&IR. And there's also a railroad that went straight north, the Elder Smith, called the Duluth and Northern Minnesota Railroad. And that was a railroad that was built to facilitate logging, moving logging, logs and pulpwood and saw logs out of the North Woods and then to Knife River, where it crossed over the DM&IR line and went to a coal dock. Where the logs were shipped out and coal brought in for the railroad. So Knife River was a busy place, what with these two railroads converging there. We also have a ticket counter that's nearing completion thanks to Larry Ronning's finishing skills using Select Clear Maple. We also have some counter cages the depot agent would look through as he passed out tickets. They were made by Dale Burton of Burton Forge and Gallery in Larsmont and donated to the Heritage Center. Many thanks to Dale for lending his talents and replicating a 1900s ticket counter cage. I should mention here that we're very pleased to have received some funding from the IRRB, in other words, Iron Range Regional Resources, through a cultural and tourism grant. We're very appreciative of the support the IRRB has given in helping the center preserve and present the history of the Knife River area. All right, let's keep moving along here. Now, this next story here, I hope you'll find the humor in this. It's called Knife River's Bear. The next word starts with A and has two more letters, beach. I'll let you figure out what that beach is. So one nice thing about being a newsletters writer and publisher is that I'm also the editorial review board, which means I can take and choose stories as long as they are based on bare fact. Get the pun there. In the 1950s and up until the building of the Duluth to Harbor Expressway in the early 60s, local boys had a favorite swimming hole on the Knife River just above the falls and below what is now the expressway. Because it was above the first falls and off limits to stream anglers, it offered a degree of privacy. And so it was referred to as the Bear Blank Beach, which I'll just refer to as BAB. Now, boys swimming BA was not unusual in the mid-50s. All swimming at the boys' YMCA in Duluth, and where I learned to swim, was BA. Likewise, swimming classes in junior high schools in Duluth were BA. So, swimming BA for boys, which afforded a bit of privacy, was an accepted practice. Now, I grew up on 26 East and London Road, right where London Road and I-35 come together. Growing up there was much like Knife River, next to a railroad track and a lake, where we practically lived during the summer months. We boys swam BA there, and at least on a few occasions, girls too. Anyway, back to Knife River's BAB. Local Knife River boys, who are now grandfathers, favored the swim hole for its privacy, a bit of refreshing waterfall, and a long, sloping, and smooth rock. The rock made it easier to get in and out of the river, and being smooth was easy on the feet. The rock also absorbed the heat from the sun, and so one could stretch out on it and warm up after a cool dip. At 26 East, we warmed and sunned ourselves on similar rocks. Knife River boys called these rocks hot rocks. So there you have it. Interesting bit of Knife River history, stripped bare. Many thanks to the geezers who gave me the skinny on this story. There, hope you enjoyed the humor in that one. No complaints so far. Okay, now, the area in front of the depot and freight building will remain open. Now, this was kind of an issue with the Heritage Center and our landlord, the St. Louis and Lake County Regional Rail Authority. Well, we avoided an issue that would greatly compromise visitor access to the front of the depot and the freight building. Well, through a spirit of cooperation with a shared goal in mind, the St. Louis and Lake County Regional Rail Authority, North Shore Track Services, and the North Shore Scenic Railroad all worked with the Heritage Center to work out a solution. Now, the issue was a Federal Railroad Administration regulation that mandated a 4.5-foot-high fence 24 feet back towards the depot from the center of the mainline railroad. Well, this would place the fence just about 18 inches from our order board pole, the signal pole, and 7 feet from the depot. Get it? That does not give us much space in front of the depot. Well, at that location, the fence would all but prevent visitors from walking along the front face of the depot and force those with mobility issues to walk completely around the back of the depot to get the other side of the depot. And it would block any attempt to photograph the whole front of the depot. Now, Bjorn Orchard, who is general manager of North Shore Track Services and also serves as a consultant of the Regional Rail Authority, proposed using depot and freight buildings in conjunction with fencing to keep people a safe distance from the right-of-way while keeping the area in front of the buildings open. As it is now, the plan in place calls for fence along to run from Marina Road east to the depot, then be picked up again at the other side of the depot, and from there to the northwest corner of the freight building. Two buildings are about 30 feet apart. By using the building and fencing as barriers, we're able to keep the area in front of the depot and the freight buildings open. Locking gates in the fence will allow people passage to board and get off trains. The larger gate between depot and freight building will let trucks pass for snow removal and deliveries. So keeping the area open in front of our buildings is critical to the planning of the year's site work. Now we can plan placement of four 24-inch by 36-inch outdoor historical interpretive displays, a memorial to county veterans, and reconstruction of the fish loading dock that was part of the original depot. All very important, all resolved with this compromise on fencing. There'll be two different types of fencing in conjunction with the depot and freight building that'll be used to keep people safe off the right-of-way. Black chain link fencing will be used from the Marina Road east to about the rail train loading unloading platform. And more decorative period fencing will be used from that point east to the freight building. So in this way, the area immediate to the depot will fit the character of a 1900s depot. Okay, that is that. By the way, we're raising money for the fencing. Learn more about that on our website, krhcc.org. Next story, Rub-A-Dub-Dub, Crusader in a Tub. Crusader is the name of the fish tug, 35 fish tug, that we intend to restore and rebuild. Well, last summer, the Heritage Center applied to the DNR Coastal Zone Management for a $10,000 grant to cover 80% of the cost to develop a site plan with shelters for Crusader and for picnics and events. Well, the grant required a 20% local match, or $2,000 from us, for a total of $12,000 in design and engineering services. Well, on April 30th, we received the final plans from our selected firm at Crick, Ojar & Associates in partnership with SNS Associates Architects. It's a six-month process to develop the plans, and our board was closely involved all the way. We were very pleased with the design team, what the design team came up with, and you can see the final plan on our website, krhcc.org. One of the innovations of the shelter design for Crusader is recessing the hull from about the waterline down into the ground, or tub as we came to call it, but still visible from viewing ramp that runs the length of the boat. See the drawing. Good trick if you can do that on radio. Well, this idea of putting a part of the boat into a tub is that it reduced the height of the radio that allows people to look into the interior of the boat. Second, it reduces the overall height of the shelter. And the shelter roof will keep most of the water out of the tub, and water will be drained off into a drain field. The tub idea was a good example of how the Heritage Center worked with our architects to arrive at a very practical and functional boat shelter. Heritage Center board member Randy Ellisted, Larry Ronnie, and myself at different times noticed that tub idea as it was used by the National Park Service in the Apostle Islands, the National Lakeshore, and Little Sand Bay, where the fish tug Twilight has been restored and on display. Well, we suggested this idea to Luke Seidow, lead architect at SAS Architects and Associates, and he incorporated a version of the Twilight design for Twilight shelter for Crusader. It's good to be giving some attention to Crusader now, as we have focused for the last 3 years on the counterpart icon, the depot. It's our intent to take the bid-ready plans developed by a design team to qualified contractors for bids this fall, with a start date for construction on shelters and landscaping summer or fall of next year. is all contingent, of course, upon receiving funding, which we're also pursuing at this time. Now, also, with the Heritage Center, we do want to recognize some local news. And one is a wedding that took place in May. The headline reads, "And with a tug, a marriage is underway." Okay. On Saturday, May 22nd, Elrose Lucille Lindbergh, also known as Pixie, in fact, always please call her Pixie, Pixie Lindbergh of French River and Bruce James Wright of Larsmont reunited in marriage on the tugboat Nelson J. in the Two Harbors Harbor. Now, both Pixie and Bruce had lost their spouses, sadly, to cancer. But by divine intervention, they met through mutual friend Mike Ogier. Pixie is an engineer for Mike's tugboat company, Heritage Marine, and spends her time in the engine room, which is as neat as a pin. Bruce is a lifelong friend of Mike's and retired from the nursery business. Many even know the Wright family in Larsmont. Well, it's a very special day for Pixie and Bruce and all their family and friends who love them. And add to the festivities, summer 2021 arrived on their wedding day and left soon after. Okay, then we had some donations, memorials, and honorariums and sponsorships during the month of May. We had the express wagon for baggage, who was sponsored by Joe and Barbara Russell of Knife River. The depot stove by Bill Berg in memory of Terry Berg of Knife River. And we had some donations, too, with ticket counter cages, too, by Dale Burton. Thank you very much. Bruce Wright donated an air compressor, and he also donated 300 feet of rebar for our depot apron. And thank you very much, Bruce. And I'll just pause for a second here, and I'll pick up and come back to you. Jeffy, here we go with June 2021 newsletter, and happy to report this to you, and I'm about right on time here. So I hope we can give this June newsletter equal time as I did to May. Well, Memorial Day was a memorable day for Knife River. The absence of a community flagpole in Knife River for more than 60 years ended on Memorial Day when the community dedicated its official flagpole at the Heritage Site under clear blue skies. The Two Harbors American Legion Post 109 conducted the ceremony while an estimated 150 people looked on. Post Chaplain Chris Belfield presented a most thoughtful and meaningful message that recognized Memorial Day as, quote, "not a holiday or celebration, but a time to honor the men and women in uniform who served our country and gave their lives for our freedoms," unquote. The chaplain also noted how Knife River served the World War II effort by providing fish to a nation and using their boat-building skills to build escort ships for the Navy that helped win the Battle of the North Atlantic. Chaplain Belfield also introduced Polly Weemy Sanis, who spoke for the Weemy family members, who will be remembered with a brass plaque that will be attached to the pole at a later date. The Weemy family paid for the flagpole, a large 7-foot by 10-foot flag, a 3-shot rifle volley in honor of veterans who gave their lives for country, completed the ceremony. You can see the whole ceremony on YouTube, videotaped by Jim Allert, by going to our website, Knife River, which is krhcc.org. I believe that video should be up by now. Okay, concrete crew rallies to complete depot apron ahead of deadline. Well, if you may remember from past newsletters or past news from Knife River, there was a concrete surrounded the Knife River Depot, back formed, put down about 1900, I suppose. It all cracked and heaved and needed to be replaced. It was a hazard for anybody with a mobility issue and certainly not ADA compliant. Well, we're very pleased when Lloyd K. Johnson Foundation awarded the Heritage Center a grant of $6,000 last summer to cover the cost, or at least part of it, with the concrete needed to replace the old and cracked depot apron, which was also a tripping hazard, as I mentioned. Like most grants, it came with a fuse, and this one was a 6 months to complete the project and submit a final report. Now, we knew this could be a challenge as COVID reduced the ranks of our mostly retired volunteers. And then our contractor, who was to remove the old apron, was 3 months late as a result of demand on his services. So it wasn't until early November last year when we were able to pour about a third of the apron with evening temperatures barely above freezing. It was clear we'd not make the six-month deadline. We applied for extension of the grant time frame, which was granted until the end of this month, in June. Many thanks to the Lloyd K. Johnson Foundation for understanding the circumstances leading to our extension request. In May, our concrete crew tackled the apron once more, and on Wednesday, June 3rd, we poured about half the remaining apron, and then on Tuesday, June 15th, the balance. Wow, well done, and 2 weeks in advance of the deadline. Let me tell you, this was hard work. Concrete's very heavy and comes out of the truck very fast. We needed 8 to 10 able bodies for each pour, which consisted of filling and leveling 4 to 6 apron sections at a time. And we're very pleased to see Jerry, a seasonal RVer at the Knife River Campground, join us in the pour. Jerry says, I needed something to do and be useful, so here I am. Well, great was that. Jerry is from Andover, Minnesota, now living in Arkansas, and his wife Natasha is from Louisiana. This is their second summer at the Knife River Campground, and they have enjoyed watching the progress made and wanted to be part of it. We thank you both. While we realize that younger men would have helped had they had not work conflicts, please, everyone, give the concrete geezer crew, myself included, credit for making the grant deadline. Here's a question. What happened to all the Great Lakes fleets? Okay. Now, a chart now in the depot shows the stack colors of the Great Lakes fleets. They crisscrossed the Great Lakes during the 1950s. Usually on the stack, you'd see their colors and their logo. Well, only a handful of these fleets remain today. You can't see the chart, but I would guess there's at least 30 fleets that were represented on that chart. Well, in 1921, Pittsburgh Steamship Division, which was U.S. Steel's fleet, alone had 96 boats. Decline in fleets and overall number of boats traversing the Great Lakes can be attributed to today's 1,000-foot boats that can carry as much as 5 times that of smaller ships built prior to 1940. And competition from railroads, in some cases trucks, cut into the business too. Our historian, Todd Lindo, wanted to display the chart to give center visitors a sense of how the Great Lakes served as a superhighway connecting the upper Midwest to the East Coast and even to New Orleans. Cargoes in addition to iron ore shipped from and to Western Lake Superior included grain, limestone, coal, salt, pulp, and even cars and petroleum products. The railroad line between Duluth and Two Harbors, which included Knife River, was a part of this very efficient water transportation system, and many from Knife River worked for these fleets now long gone. This chart is particularly meaningful to me. As a preteen self-described wharf rat, I made friends with Ralph Knowlton, who was with the Army Corps of Engineers in Canal Park. Actually, Ralph was actually a spark plug for the Marine Museum, a great man and a good friend. Well, he gave me a chart just like the one in the picture, the one I described. I grew up on the lake at 26th Avenue East on Leonard Road, and with this chart, I could identify the fleet of almost any boat that passed by our home. There's one fleet I could identify without the chart, and that was Nicholson Transit. In addition to bringing up a bulk cargo in its hold, it had new cars on its deck. Well, the sun would shine on the windshield of these cars, and the sparkle would tell me it was a Nicholson boat. Well, the chart was lost after I left home, and I deeply regretted losing it. Well, Todd Lindo had an original chart and made 2 copies, one for the depot and one for me, which I've now framed and hanging in our home, and all the grandkids enjoy identifying the different fleets that pass by our home in Knife River. Okay, for you fishermen out there, yes, there are still Chinook salmon in Lake Superior. Mild-mannered Dave Grong, valued Heritage Center volunteer, is not one to boast, but when he told me about the Chinook salmon he and Linda caught recently, I was thrilled not only for them for landing one of these beauties, but because it confirmed these tasty fish are still to be found in Lake Superior and apparently reproducing naturally. Dave said they caught it near the McQuaid Safe Harbor in 160 feet of water at a depth of 40 feet, using a silver spoon. Said Dave, we had been trolling for a while and graphing nothing. Then the screen lit up and so we dropped the line down in the middle of it and then it hit. Fun to catch. Now, according to Minnesota DNR, Chinooks were introduced first in Lake Superior by Michigan in 1967 and Minnesota in 1974. But the low catch and effort by anglers in the fall, combined with low returns to the fish traps during spawning, prompted the reevaluation of the program. As a result, Minnesota stopped stocking Chinook salmon in 06. Wisconsin stopped in 07. Thankfully, Michigan and Ontario continue to stock Chinook salmon. And many of them are reproducing naturally. Dave did not weigh the Chinook, but picture this in your mind, Dave holding a big, beautiful Chinook about 15 pounds. All right, Knife River. No, Heritage Center welcomes a new bistro and market. The Larsmont Trading Post, a self-described bistro and market, has opened at the site of the once Gill's Sandwich Shop in Larsmont. Well, our Heritage Center welcomes this new enterprise to a suburb of Knife River and wishes its owners, Derek and Ann Wright, much success. Derek is part of the longtime Wright family of Larsmont. Your writer stopped by the Larsmont Trading Post last month to be greeted by Derek and Ann as they're applying the finishing touches to a very bright and spacious interior with a charm befitting the character of the North Shore. Derek said their menu is fresh, hand-prepared foods ranging from crafted cold sandwiches on artisan breads, breakfast sandwiches on grilled sourdough, hot grilled sandwiches, espresso coffees, cheese boards with artisan cheeses and cured meats, wines, craft beers, and hand-scooped ice cream and floats. Man, something for everybody. I'm doing this recording right before lunch, and I probably shouldn't have read that last paragraph. Hungry. Ann pointed out that along with the basic necessities, they're also a specialty food market with many unique small-batch foods. They carry a line of home-style foods, high in taste, with limited preservatives. The Larsmont Trading Post has indoor-outdoor eating, seating, along with online ordering, pickup, curbside service, and delivery from Knife River to Two Harbors. We like to welcome new business. We want to support them. We value them, and so I encourage you to support the Larsmont Trading Post in Larsmont. Okay, now let's keep moving along here. Duluth gives the Viking ship to a nonprofit. The nonprofit is now free to find a new home for it. Well, we're interested in this because this nonprofit called SOS Save Our Ship is interested, perhaps, in relocating the boat to Knife River and make it part of our Heritage Center. Well, on June 22nd, the Duluth City Council voted unanimously at its weekly council meeting to donate the Viking ship Leif Erikson, a once Duluth icon, to nonprofit Save Our Ship, Save Our Ship organization, also called SOS. The vote now gives SOS the opportunity to finally find a home for the ship that has been without one since 1985. The city was gifted the ship by Duluth businessman Bert Enger in 1927 after it retraced the course thought to have been taken by Leif Erikson from Norway to North America and then to Duluth as part of a Great Lakes Goodwill tour. Enger included a covenant that the city would care for the boat and publicly display it. The SOS organization maintains the city did not fulfill the covenant, which Duluth Mayor Emily Larson has acknowledged, and so the ship now belongs to SOS. SOS President Neil Atkins told the city that his organization has identified two potential sites, one being the Knife River Heritage and Cultural Center and the other in Canal Park. Well, what all this means is that a site out of Duluth is now under consideration, and then one that SOS board member and also Kate Knife River Heritage Center board member Randy Ellestad of Knife River says makes a lot of sense. Randy says, the ship needs to be placed where it can be seen by the public 24/7, should be on public land, close to the lake, and where visitors can easily find and access it. The Heritage Center offers all this, and both Knife River and Two Harbors have had ties to Leif Erikson from when it traveled along the North Shore on its way to Duluth in 1927. Ellestad said that Duluth Council's decision expects SOS can now devote its full energies to selecting either the Heritage in Knife River, or a location in Canal Park. So, stay tuned. We'll see what happens. Now, I had some comments on this, too. I said that the Heritage Center is moving ahead with plans to build a shelter for the Fishing Tug Crusader, which is a Knife River icon next year, 2022. But we have set space aside in our site plan for two boat shelters, the other for Leif Erikson. Now, if that's the decision of Leif Erikson people. They will design and fund their own shelter, but one that is in architectural harmony to the one for Crusader. Leif Erikson, so stay tuned for that. Let's see, last story here. A Knife River popular destination for North Shore scenic train riders. Knife River continues to be a popular destination option for riders on North Shore Scenic Railroad. Each of the three picnic trains in June sold out all 75 seats, according to Josh Miller, station manager. The sellout echoes last fall's 8 fall color trains to Knife River, which also sold out. It appears a shorter trip option in Two Harbors, access to the Agate Beach we have in Knife River, appeal of a restored train depot, and Great Lakes Candy Kitchen, all within walking distance, are factors in Knife River's increasing popularity according to Depot's agent. That's me, who greets train visitors. Okay, do want to remind that the North Shore Scenic removes all trash, as we have no garbage service, and they share in the cost of a porta potty with the Heritage Center. And with that, I am right at my timeline, and I will be back next month with the news from Knife River for the news on July. Have a nice day.